This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, a lot of Bush backlash. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Republican strategist Tara Settmeyer. From our New York bureau, Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition, and George Curry joins us. He's editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. He joins us from Maryland today. All right, folks, one of the things we wanted to talk about was what a lot of people saw late Friday. And that is Michael Brown, former FEMA chief before Congress, defending his position, suggesting that he was being scapegoated, that he wasn't going to take it. Here's an exchange between Mr. Brown and Senator Norm Coleman. Let's take a listen.
I'm not sure you got it. I got to tell you, the record, not the emails, but the record, reflects that you didn't get it, or you didn't in writing or some way make commands that would move people to do what has to be done until way after it should have been done.
Senator, with all due respect, what do you want me to say? I have admitted to mistakes publicly. I've admitted to mistakes in hearings. What more, Senator Coleman, do you want from me?
The senator went on to say a little bit of candor would be good. Michael Myers, when you hear someone start with all due respect, you know you're going to have some trouble. Michael Brown was feisty, to say the least. His suggestion is he's not going to go down with the ship. He's trying to obviously save some of his reputation. The contentious hearings that we saw on Friday, what do you make of all of this?
Well, if without making reference to the other headlines today, this is truly the gang that could not shoot straight. This is the gang that can't talk straight on, and but for Senator Susan Collins' parliamentary maneuver to make sure that executive privilege was not invoked, we would not have had that candor, even that little bit of candor from Brownie. I call him Brownie. Look, Brownie, up until recently, according to President Bush, did a heck of a job. Now, I didn't know what heck of a job meant, but we do know that in a world of instant communications, there were massive communication failures, failure to read emails, failure to heed messages, failure of coordination, failure of competence. But I must tell you, this guy is beginning to sound like a scapegoat, because I have to ask myself when I was listening to the testimony, what more do you want from me? What more do you want from Brownie? He's admitted that he made big, big mistakes. Nobody else has admitted that.
Mm-hmm. George Curry?
Well, I mean, first of all, I wouldn't say that he's testified only because of what Susan Collins did. I mean, he went to the White House, went to Harriet Myers trying to get executive clemency, and they said no, which what that did was open
executive
the door,
privilege.
Which means... Excuse me. So what that did is open the door so that he could share communication, conversation, and everything else. And so the White House kind of left him out there on his own on this. But the bottom line in this is he has a serious credibility problem. And before he was always saying it's all the state, NAS, local NABs, all of a sudden it's all the feds. I mean, who's going to believe this character?
Well, Tara Settmeyer, it does seem to be an issue of believability when you talk about Michael Brown here.
Well, sure. And I think that I'm not going to defend Michael Brown or what he did or what happened during those days, because obviously he has a amount of culpability here that goes without saying. But it is true, these hearings, nothing new was really revealed. It was just a regurgitation of pointing the finger and trying to point blame on someone for what was a series of serious missteps. And I think what did come out of this hearing, though, was the fact that the restructuring of FEMA under the Department of Homeland Security was obviously a huge mistake. And these are issues that we really need to consider, because I think everyone does not want a repeat of what happened here when the next natural disaster or terrorist attack hits.
Yeah.
There's an expression in Latin, pergamentum in it, pergamentum exit, garbage in, garbage out. And I think that that's what has taken place with this level of bureaucracy. You don't fix an agency like this by replacing the parts. You fix it by improving the design.
But Tara, we may not have seen much come out of the hearings, but what we are seeing in terms of the week that just passed, if you take a look at Lewis Scooter Libby, who is suggesting, and of course Mr. Libby has been indicted on 5 counts of perjury and obstruction of justice, who is now suggesting that his superiors ordered him to leak to the press evidence to support the claim that Saddam Hussein possessed and sought weapons of mass destruction. We know that the White House has said that that has not been the case. Of course, Mr. Libby, former chief of staff here to Vice President Dick Cheney. When you take a look at that, when you take a look at Brown suggesting that, hey, we alerted the White House, we didn't get the kickback in the time that we needed, we're starting to see, perhaps even more than I've ever seen before, people who have been left out, distanced by the White House, saying, wait a minute, we're not taking this. Let me tell you what really went on.
Well, but the problem with that, though, is that the emails, Ed, it shows that he was consumed about his, how he looked, his clothing, and all these other tangential matters. I mean, so it's just not a matter of him saying the White House not doing this, that.
No, I understand that, George.
They'll indict him. They'll indict him.
I understand that, but I'm saying that. Juxtaposed to Scooter Libby's suggestion that, hey, I didn't do this on my own, that this, in fact, was sent down from above. When you juxtapose those, you start to look at a White House who is at best suggesting that they didn't know all of what their folks were doing.
Absolutely. You're getting a very defensive posturing here. And in government scandals, what people want to know, the press and the public at large wants to know, is what did you know? When did you know it? At least we know with respect to Bronco Brown's testimony, we know that that FEMA knew and Homeland Security knew long before we thought they knew. We also know from Scooter Libby that people, just like Michael Brown, I agree with you, Ed, that Libby looks to me, at least, aside from the charges of perjury, he's beginning to paint himself as a fall guy. And I can't get very hepped up about this fall guy situation because of this White House and the White House policies and its posturing. And because I'm fearing down the road, if there are convictions, there are also going to be pardons.
Well, it's beyond Libby, though, that way. It's beyond Libby because this is the way Washington operates. See, this White House said it was punishes that they would punish anybody who leaked, but at the same time, they're engaged in selective leaking. That's how the game is played in Washington, and that's part of the play. And there is no way I think Scooter Libby would have leaked it or could have leaked that without the vice president knowing it.
And, Tara, while we know that this is the way the game is played in Washington, what does become problematic is while you're playing the game, that all of these cards start to fall at the same time.
Right, and that's the point that I was going to make before George made it before me. This is really no different than any other White House. This is the political posturing, maneuvering that takes place every day. Not saying
but Tara,
that if this, you broke
this
the law,
administration then, suggested that they weren't going to play the game as every other administration did. I mean, that was a big calling card for this president.
Right, and let's not paint so broadly about every other
go
White
ahead,
House.
Tara. Go ahead, Tara.
But at the same time, when you're dealing, it's very difficult in the day-to-day. I think that may have been a certain amount of naivety involved in that and a certain amount of campaign themes that sound popular and an unrealistic promise. Because no matter what you do, and as admirable as that may have been, we see that that's unavoidable to certain degrees. There's so many layers involved here that it's almost unavoidable for issues like this to take place. It happens in every administration. But we need to also remember, though, that what Scooter Libby was accused of has nothing to do with what the original charge and what the original investigation was about. He has not been charged with disclosing Valerie Plame's identity. Wasn't that what the outrage about this entire investigation was initially about? And that
well, it depends on which side of the fence you sit, Michael Myers, because while that was the case for the press, the outrage from the administration was, doggone it, who's making these leaks? And when we find out, they will pay.
Well, you got to remember the prosecutor. You know, however this thing started, Tara, the guy is charged. Libby is charged not only with perjury, with corruption of justice, impeding justice, the pursuit of justice. So that brings his credibility into line. And I must tell you that, you know, when you have an administration, a White House that just continues with the scandals of misleading the public, misleading the press, misleading us, including with so-called classified information about the weapons of mass destruction and then having a war in Iraq, which now seems to me to be unjustified, misleading us with respect to who is being spied on in terms of surveillance. We have a crisis of confidence, and unfortunately we do not have the opposition party that is capable or competent enough to bring out the real deal or a bipartisan outrage that would bring about remedies to this kind of misconduct, and that means impeachment. That's
George,
a bipartisan remedy.
That's a pretty strong word there, Michael Myers. George, I'm sure that we will be
accused of
piling on, but I would simply say to those who are readying themselves at their keyboard that we're just taking what's in the headlines over the course of the last couple of days. Here is yet another finger pointed back at the White House, this from, and albeit all from people who are in trouble, Jack Abramoff suggesting that, hey, this president met him at least a dozen times. And this is a quote from a memo that was a correspondence that was released. This is from Jack Abramoff. The guy saw me in almost a dozen settings and joked with me about a bunch of things, including details of my kids. Perhaps he has forgotten everything. Who knows?
I mean, the White House has been really curious in terms of just don't want the pictures released, but Time Magazine has them this week, I understand. I don't know why they're that defensive if they have nothing to hide. I mean, I suspect, considering this guy's influence, I suspect he obviously had some contacts with the White House and probably more than the administration want to admit. I mean, he was a real power broker.
Well, all right, Tara, let's go to what you suggested earlier, the idea that this is the way the game is played. You and I both know when you give the kind of money Jack Abramoff has given, when you go more than once, more than twice, but at least a dozen times, which the White House doesn't deny, you know at some point the president or his handlers remember this guy. The money was too big.
Absolutely, and I actually worked for Jack Abramoff in college, and he was a different guy then, and it saddens me to see what this has turned into, and it's a shame. But anyway, as far as the president's reaction to this, I think that it was unwise for the president to come out and for the White House to come out and say and speak so adamantly to say, well, I have no idea, I never met him, because we all know that was obviously the case. I think that they were looking at in the future. The reason why they didn't want to release those photographs is because we all know this is a seriously important midterm election, and that those pictures would be plastered all over the place and used as campaign material. So the White House wants to avoid that. And the picture that Time Magazine has is one that's rather obscure with Jack Abramoff in the background. They have to have a circle around his face so you can see who it is, yeah. and to use that. This is the way things are in this town. This is what Jack Abramoff has done. Again, I've said this many times in this program, has just shown the uglier side of power, money, and influence in the White House, and that is on both sides of the aisle.
Well, I don't know Jack Abramoff, and he never given me any money, and I'm pretty sure I never met him. I'm less concerned about the small, little pictures that the press may have as opposed to the big picture. The big picture of scandal, the big picture of the overwhelming power and corruptive influence of money on both sides of the Congress and on both sides, and both Democrats and Republicans. I'm really concerned about the big picture, and it's getting to be the point of a Canadian situation. You could have Congress really change now because people are sick and tired of this corruption, the scandal, and the perceptions of corruption. One could actually meet someone 1,200 times and not know him. I remember when Ronald Reagan had a cabinet member he didn't even recognize. It's not the little picture, it's the big picture I'm concerned about.
Right, and then also in this situation, they need to be fair, because we know that Harry Reid, the Democrat majority leader in the Senate, he got $68,000 from Jack. He's written four letters on behalf of Indian tribes and things that Jack and his clients worked with, but that is an aside. There's an asterisk next to that. We don't talk about that as much.
Well, but the point here, Tara, is not the idea. I mean, we all know that both sides of the aisle are littered with the dead body of lobbyists who've tried to sell their ideas and push their points. The reality here, though, is, George Curry, whether or not you can see the White House as being up and up, wouldn't it have been enough for the president to suggest that, look, yeah, I know the guy, but I know him just in the sense of glad-handing, never had any real conversation, never met him on White House grounds, outside of public functions, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that would have been a wiser choice. But let's be clear here. Abramoff was primarily, he did give money to Democrats, but primarily, and that's not to say it doesn't happen on both sides, primarily most of the money went to GOP. It mostly went to Republicans, particularly in leadership positions.
They're the ones in power.
Delaying
because
rest
they were,
of them,
that's right.
Because
the
they're the one who can, hold on, let me finish, so that he can, because they can influence things. And so that's what the case has been here. And so the White House is extremely, I think they think they're vulnerable here because nobody wants to be tarnished by it. Yet you have leaders who actually won, I think, on the Republican side, who actually leased an apartment from him. I mean, this thing is just slimy on both sides. And it just I don't think there's any real prospect they're going to clean it up.
Tara, let me ask you, as a Republican strategist, rough week? and I mean that in the true sense. I mean, you've got to figure that people, you know, after last week are looking at what do we do? What's the spin? Where do we take it?
Yeah, this was we've had better weeks, but there's never a dull moment.
Yes.
And we've had better weeks, but this is nothing that happened this week isn't something that we aren't able to come out of. Again, the American public has a very short memory, and I'm just thankful that these incidents aren't taking place in the fall.
You know, Michael, is that part of the issue, what Tara just suggested here, to some degree with a little fun and flippant nature, but mm-hmm. the idea that politicians do bank on the fact that Americans have a short memory when it becomes political?
Yeah, everybody banks on short memory, believe me. But the problem is that the Democrats are not so far capitalizing on these scandals. I mean, to some extent, they are involved in it, implicated and stained by the scandal. But they are also the gang that can't shoot straight. They are so inept. They
but
are so incompetent. They can't even make parliamentary maneuvers. After being in power for so many years in Congress, why don't they know the parliamentary tricks so that they can stop the Congress and stop the Alito and situation from being confirmed? But they can't get their act together because they disagree with each other. So the elections are up in the air again, once
all
again.
Right. Well, they can't stop Alito because they didn't have votes. I mean, let's start there. And you basically have both parties in the opposition. You got Democrats who said, I'm accustomed to governing, and I don't know how to be the opposition party. And you have Republicans said, we used to throw in flames at the opposition party.
Yeah.
We don't know how to govern.
All right.
Competent.
Well, the beat goes on.
Yes,
George,
sir.
Michael, Tara, thank you so much. Greatly appreciated. We were going to get to a Kobe Bryant story that we'll move over to tomorrow. Kobe has returned as a pitchman. We'll talk about that on tomorrow's roundtable.